Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you very much for coming. We're delighted to say that we've made really great progress over the last, I think it's 4 months since we saw some of you in July. And we're really pleased with the significant momentum that we're starting to see in the business. So sales accelerated as we went throughout the period. So the first quarter of the year, as you know, was up 23% year on year. Q2 was up 84% year on year. The month of September was up 112% year on year. And then post-period, we've seen record trading as we've gone into autumn and winter. So October was up well over 100%. It was also the first month where we had £1 million of net revenue after returns, which we were absolutely delighted with. And also very pleased to say that November is on track to beat that record and be yet another record month. So we really see ourselves making huge strides towards achieving the vision of being a one-stop shop for the women who've graduated from fast fashion and want quality, trend-led, affordable clothing for all their lifestyle needs. The success has really been driven by the investment that we've made in team, in product and in marketing. We began investing in the team at the beginning of half one, really building a much more robust product team across every area in order to deliver a much wider product choice as we went into autumn. And I'll come on to talk about that more in the presentation. We've broadened our supply chain significantly to support that product expansion. And we've also invested in new marketing channels to support our existing channels, which includes TV. I'm going to come on to talk in much more detail about that as we go through, and James will as well. The success that we've seen as a business is really built, I think, on two core principles. One is that we're a highly creative business, but we're a business that's completely underpinned by data. So all our product is designed exclusively in-house, and we constantly bring in new in-product to excite our customers. And we have highly engaging content across all our platforms. And all of this is underpinned by data, which constantly feeds back into all our marketing and into our product development.
Coming on to the finances, the first slide is just our income statement, showing the 53% revenue growth and 50% in gross profit. But I'm going to come on to talk about everything in more detail in the following slides. The graph on this slide really just highlights the amount of momentum that we've seen going into September and the autumn period. So as Julie said, Q1 up 23%, Q2 84%, and September up over 112%. And this has been driven by the investment in the team, product and marketing, especially marketing in the September period. The graph on the left just shows the continued success we're having in our repeat order growth. And that underpins the business, and we see that really improving over time. The graph on the right just shows how customer acquisition is linked to our marketing. And you can see that when we invest in marketing, we're very successful at driving that increased customer acquisition. That's predominantly in September has been by the addition of TV to complement our other existing channels. And that drives not just orders and revenue, but also customer engagement through the amount of email signups and brochure signups that we've seen. And we really expect to see some ongoing benefit of that over time. The next slide really just demonstrates in sort of graph form where the investment's gone. So the grey bars being the marketing, the pink bars being the central operations. The graph on the right shows the cost as percentage of revenue. The increase in the product development team has been made in half one, and we're starting to see the benefits from September and autumn winter. And all of that growth in the autumn winter period is being delivered off the same fixed cost base. So we really expect to see some leverage in the operational efficiencies in there. And then with the marketing, obviously it was backloaded into September, and TV being a new channel, we expect to see the ongoing efficiencies over time as we get the benefit of the repeat orders and also from those email signups and brochure signups that we talked about. Moving on to the next slide, this just shows the benefit of upfront acquisition. So this shows the amount of revenue we generate from the average customer over time. So the red line shows the revenue we've generated from an average customer that we acquired in 2017. And what you can see is that there's linear growth in the revenue that we generate over time, and it's not really showing any signs of slowing down. I think the other pleasing thing is that the customers we acquired in 2018, 2019 are performing over and above those. And we expect with the investment into product that we've made, that increases choice, which increases frequency of purchase, and should therefore continue to improve the lifetime revenue over time. Moving on to the next slide, this is all evidenced. All of the things we've spoken about are evidenced in our active customer growth, which is up 70%, and also our order frequency, which is up 8%. Just as a reminder, active customer base is defined as the number of people who have shopped in the last 12 months, and order frequency is total orders divided by active customer base. The order frequency is also improved by 8% year on year, and that's despite such heavy acquisition in the September period where those customers haven't had chance to repeat. And so we know that the order frequency is actually higher in real terms than the number shown in this graph. Underlying the growth, we just have some of the KPIs on the next page. So you can see the continued web visits and orders. Conversion has shown improvement, and that's despite the marketing mix change where we've invested in TV. TV drives huge amounts of engagement and orders, but over and above that, it gets email signups as people dual screen while they're watching TV. So they may not order straight away, but they come onto the website, they sign up for a brochure and email, and we convert them over time. We expect to see conversion again to continue improve, and it stacks up well against this established mature retailers in the e-commerce market.
So effectively, the download of emails and brochures is a lead indicator, and it's presumably pretty accurate lead indicator. Yeah.
If you used email sign up or brochure sign up as a proxy for an order in the future, obviously your conversion rate would be higher. But with TV advertising, it's got slightly different dynamics to our existing marketing channels, which are very much direct response. TV, people come, so if you receive a brochure, you see a product, you come with a direct intention to purchase. Whereas with TV, we're building that brand engagement, and really we've seen exceptional growth within our customer database since we went onto TV, and we do come onto that later on. Average order value, we've had huge success in some of the new product areas, and that has impacted the average product value in H1, but we did see improvements in units per basket, and post-period we've seen improvement in average order value, and again I'll come on to that in a second. Underpinning the growth is a healthy gross margin at 54%. By investing into new product areas, we use the test and repeat model to minimise stock risk. So we order in small minimum order quantities and then put the successful lines into repeat very quickly when we see that they're succeeding. In H1, obviously, we had a lot of new products, and so there was a lot of smaller minimum order quantities. But again, we've seen progression in gross margin post-period, and I'll come on to that again in a second. The next slide just shows the progression we've seen post-period in the average order value and margin. Average order value has been impacted, so we've had really good success in outerwear and leather as the colder weather hit. And so that drives up their higher price points, so that drives up the average unit price of products, which helps boost the AOV. And then as we're starting to repeat into the new product lines that were successful in H1, we're seeing the average order quantities build, and that's providing margin improvements going forward. Finally, just on the balance sheet and the cash flow, so strong cash position going into the rest of this year and beyond, so 7, 6.9 million. You can see that the stock has increased, which is linked to the really successful open winter trading period that we've had. So we always make sure that we've got the right amount of stock for the demand that we're generating. The only other thing to note that in the interim period is that an accounting change under IFRS 16 requires you to bring leases onto your balance sheet. So there's a couple of new items on there: a right of use asset, which is effectively the fair value of the lease, and a corresponding lease liability. But there's no change to the underlying business. It's just an accounting policy change. And the cash flow really just demonstrates the points that we've made.
Okay, so I'm going to come on just to talk more about operational strategy. So first of all, about how we're really building stronger foundations on which to grow the business. So first of all, team, as I mentioned earlier. So we've begun investing further into team at the beginning of half one, particularly around product. So this is not just design, it's also buying, sourcing, merchandising and garment technology. So we had the infrastructure to broaden that product base as we went into the second half of the year. We've also strengthened the middle management area of the business. So that's the area really below myself, Ali, James and Lindsay, who's our head of marketing and e-commerce, that sort of middle management tier. We've recruited more people there to really fortify the business. We've also invested in specialist design and specialist buying resource in areas that were new for us, like footwear and accessories and knitwear. And then we've also invested further in marketing and the creative team. I think the important point here as well is we've seen a significant change, I think I would say, over the last year in terms of the places that we are able to recruit from. Because as Sosandar is building in awareness, people are more and more are wanting to work for us, and we're recruiting from very major players in the industry. One thing I would say is we are still quite a small team, though. So it sounds as though we're investing. We are still only a team of 40 people. So, you know, we're running an entire retail operation with a team of 40, and we are very careful and controlled in who and when we recruit, and only recruit as and when we absolutely need to. So on to the next slide, which is the team feeding into product expansion. So the pink bars are the number of new styles coming in, and the grey line is the average order quantity. So you can see how the product range has continued to increase. We now have more than double the number of SKUs that we had a year ago. We have about 1,000 SKUs on site now. And we're also increasing our order quantities, which really brings the economies of scale and margin benefits. But as James said, we operate a test and repeat model. So what we're really doing as a business is building this base of products that sell incredibly well, that we can just order and reorder. And that base of products is getting bigger and bigger all the time. And we're able to then repeat, not just in that particular colour or print, we'll repeat in other colours and other prints. And then we layer the newness on top.
Presumably with better terms, buying terms.
Yes.
As it gets.
Exactly. So the more, the basic principle is, yes, the bigger your order quantity, the better margin that you will get. Just to talk a little bit more about the specific product. So we've expanded our core areas, dresses, separates, jersey, leather, party wear, all very strong sellers for Sosandar. And then we've seen great growth in the areas that we particularly talked about when we were presenting the results back in July. So knitwear, we've had very healthy growth in knitwear. Denim has been phenomenal. We're up about 1,000% year on year for denim. And that's just dresses at the moment. We've had a few pairs of jeans, but jeans are coming in January. Footwear and accessories has been very strong. We've also moved into faux leather. So leather is one of our core categories. So leather jackets, leather skirts, leather dresses. And we now have a very good range of faux leather. So that can either be for ethical reasons, people buy faux leather, or it's also a price point. They can get the same leather look, but at a lower price. And we've seen great success in that area.
Can I just ask, how often do you move suppliers?
So it's much more a case of expanding the supply base really now. So we've got nearly 40 suppliers now. That's more than doubled over the last 6 months.
And where are they?
Right across the world. So everywhere from India, China, Turkey, a little bit in the UK, Brazil for shoes as well. So global supply base. So we've mitigated any risk we've got with the supply base by having a multitude of different suppliers, and also different suppliers excel at different things. So moving on to marketing. Marketing is not just about driving sales. It's obviously about acquiring customers, but it's also about building the Sosandar brand and a brand that consumers engage with. So in the same way that we are broadening our product mix, we've also diversified our marketing channels. So we still use all our existing channels that have all been very successful for us and continue to be very successful. So direct mail, social, celebrity and PR, email, Google Shopping, affiliates, retargeting, all of these are very much still part of the marketing mix and a very important part of the marketing mix. And then on top of that, we've layered TV, digital, out of home, and also influencer outreach, so doing campaigns with fashion influencers where they're all wearing Sosandar garments at the same time and all posting on Instagram in a set period of time, which drives huge engagement with the brand. And we are always continuing to look at exploring new avenues as well, whether that be talking to third parties, looking at international tests, or expanding our use of video on YouTube.
Can I ask about third-party platforms?
Yes.
I mean, given the success that you've had sort of quote-unquote organically, yes, do you feel as a business you need the third-party platforms?
As the business is growing and awareness is growing And particularly, we've had a lot of press recently. Draper's, the fashion bible of, we were on the front cover of Draper's recently, which has very much driven interest from suppliers and third parties. So we're getting contacted by a lot of different third parties now. We're currently selling on Silk Thread, which I think we were when we spoke last time. So we're continuing with that partnership. With the other third parties, we're in the middle of talking to them all, evaluating the opportunity and making a decision about whether we trial with some of them or not. And we haven't yet made that decision. But the number of people contacting us, of course, has increased
which is positive. So you can create some sort of tension around pricing or...
Yeah, and choose the right partners if we decide to go that road.
I think potentially some of the third parties have such loyalty within their customer base that they potentially open up a new customer base as well, who maybe aren't used to trying new brands online. So they're all things that we've got to sort of weigh up and consider when we're looking at the opportunities. But I think the key thing is that the opportunities are there and they're coming to us as the brand recognition increases.
And by new customer base, you're primarily talking geographically?
Well, I think more about people interacting with certain brands. So people may be on some of these third-party platforms, they may be a religious shopper within that place. And so with these third-party platforms building on their existing products with new third parties, they're able to leverage, you know, their existing loyal customer base. And it may be customers that we wouldn't necessarily get geographically, maybe, but I think it's more about the interaction with those third-party brands and whether or not they would interact with a new brand online.
Okay, so just to come on to talk about TV, kind of when you say TV, it sounds like this big thing. Actually, the way we are using TV is we're using it like a digital medium. So we started with very much testing. We tested in Granada. We've then rolled out TV into Meridian and Tyne Tees. But it's been about testing specific programmes. So we monitor certain programmes, we look at the results, and then we're then either reusing those programmes or moving the programmes. So it's actually isn't the expensive big medium I think that a lot of people think it is. It's actually very relatively straightforward to control, and you know exactly how much you've spent on a slot and therefore what you get back from that slot to help you make decisions going forward.
How do you correlate the sales that you get after the event to the TV effect?
There's obviously an immediate impact, and you can see immediate sales growth and look at the incremental growth you've got in that point. What we also do is timestamp the email address and brochure signups that we get on site, and so we can collect those as a collective of customers and track their performance over time. So we can get actually quite detailed, but as we were saying before, TV doesn't necessarily have the same level of direct response, so it's really about how that performs increasingly over time.
I just thought we'd show you the ad. I'm not sure everyone will have seen it.
SoSander.com. Online now, SoSander.com.
The slide in front of you is just people searching for SoSander. So you can see when the TV started in September, how that suddenly started to grow exponentially. And then the next slide, this is by day people signing up for the newsletter, so the subscriber database. So you can see the first part of the graph on the right. You can see the movements, you know, by day, but then you can see that sudden increase when the TV started. And so it's a considerably much, much higher number of signups. So in 1 month alone in September, we had the same number of people signing up for the newsletter as we'd had in a prior full 6 month period. So it really has created a complete step change. And now the number of signups are up 300% year on year. So that database pot that we've got is much, much bigger than it was. We are very confident in our ability to convert people. And once we've got them, you then convert them for relatively low cost because it's email generally that you'd convert them through. One of the reasons that social performs so well for us is the celebrity endorsements that we have. And what we've really seen over the last few months with celebrity is the number of celebrities that engage with the brand continues to grow, but it's much more about the frequency as well. So to give you an example, this week alone, Amanda Holden wore a Sosandar dress on Monday. Yesterday, Charlotte Hawkins wore a dress on Good Morning Britain. Susanna Reid went to Lorraine Kelly's 60th birthday party in a Sosandar dress. We were on primetime TV last night on one of the Strictly Come Dancing professionals. Amy Dowden wore a dress. So, and then we'll also, so that's four people, and it's only Wednesday. 6 months ago, we wouldn't have been seeing anything like that volume of celebrities and with that amount of frequency. So partly that's the awareness and the brand growing, but also obviously the choice of product that we've got. We also see that message being amplified on the Daily Mail online, which has huge traffic. We're regularly on there. So celebrities will wear our clothes. The Daily Mail will feature those celebrities and we'll have a direct link back to our website to buy whatever they're wearing, and also Hello online. And of course, all this is free. This is not paid for marketing. The industry recognition that we've had is very much growing. We've won two Drapers Awards this year. We've also just been nominated for a Retail Week Award for Emerging Retailer, which we're really proud to have been nominated for that. We've been featured in Drapers. We were on BBC Northwest very recently. It's great for the team and it's very positive and really incredibly motivating. But more than that, it's really helps with recruitment, and it also helps with suppliers. So we're finding the number of suppliers that are now contacting us and wanting to work with us because they're hearing about us from all this publicity that we're getting.
So one of the reasons for the raise was to accelerate growth, but it was also some concern that the suppliers...
Yes.
With terms of supplies, has that dynamic changed?
It's playing out as we expected it to. So the newer, as we've broadened our supply base, and we're choosing suppliers based on the quality, their capabilities, and what margin they can deliver, and what fabrics they've got, and we're not being restricted by the fact that they may not give us credit terms, which is what we want. What we wanted to do, and we are finding new suppliers. You can't get credit from new suppliers
because you're an unknown. Yeah?
And also they can't get credit insurance on us because of what has happened really in the market.
I think some part of that credit insurance conversation though is history. So you need to develop history before you can start having any kind of meaningful conversations. But what we didn't want to do is restrict our supply base just because of who we could get credit with.
But as you go forward,
we would hope
the business executes, you'd hope that becomes less of a...
Certainly what we've seen some success in that in the past with some other suppliers where you initially don't get credit and you start to build that as the relationship builds and as you build in importance to that supplier. So we would hope that with volume would come some better trading.
So the second part of the question is a bit redundant then, but do you think you have to have keep a net cash balance above a certain number to ensure that?
I mean, in our forecasting for the foreseeable future, we assume that we can forecast on a basis that we don't get credit.
Okay. So therefore, by definition, you have to have a cash buffer within your internal forecast to make sure you do go.
Yes. So just on to outlook. So given the great momentum that we've seen building in the business throughout the autumn and November being on track to be yet another record month, we think it's a very positive outlook for the business for the rest of Q3 and going into Q4 and indeed beyond. The recent raise of 7 million has put us in a position of great financial strength. We've got a very strong operational structure in place now with the team in order to continue to widen that product range, because the product range is continuing to grow as we go into the new year. We've got lots of new product areas coming in January, February and March, as well as broadening our existing base. So we see really significant opportunity for growth, and our marketing channels are very diversified. With TV, it's incredibly scalable, and we're very confident about driving future growth, and we're on track for achieving management expectations for the full year. Any more questions?
You say that your returns are 49%.
Yeah.
And is that good, bad, or indifferent, or about...
It's down from 52% in the same period. So I think There's not huge amounts of competitive data on that particular number. We will be higher than, say, Boohoo or ASOS, because they have menswear and they typically target a younger demographic with clothes that are easier to fit. I think for us, it's a very manageable number for us, and we continue to focus on fit and the reasons behind returns to make sure that we're doing everything we can to bring those down. And we have seen returns at a product level reduce, so that we're seeing improvements on that. There are also, we know that repeat customers return less than new customers. So as that repeat base builds, proportionately, we should see some improvement in returns there as well. And equally, as we build some of the new product areas that have lower returns, that should help as well.
Do you have a sort of absolute figure that you're trying to get down to, or is it just
as low as possible? Yeah. I think it's about continuous improvement and making sure that we can continue to make that number better.
Your intangible assets are creeping upwards, not by much, but they're still quite small. But what are they?
I think that's just about adopting things onto the website. So it's predominantly website enhancements. So last year, in the last financial year, they went up, I think about, it was a bigger chunk than usual because we replatformed onto Magento 2, which is the latest e-commerce platform.
So was that the reason for the move from 111 to 163? September 2018, 111, March 2019, 163.
Yes.
That was when you went
The replatform took place in that period.
How do you think about the pound and hedging or not hedging?
What we do is we look at our forward, what we need to buy. So, I mean, a lot of our suppliers bill us in pounds. For us...
Are you there taking the currency risk on?
Effectively, yes. What we aim to achieve is that on each individual product, we can make the required margin that we want to. And so we, at the point of purchase, we have an understanding of what we can get currency at. And so we look at our forward currency and we get a rate that we have an awareness of, and then we can feed that into product pricing decisions.
Okay.
So it's all about making sure that we can make the required margin on whatever the currency is at the time.
And how far forward are you looking in reality?
So we have good visibility 3 months out,
yeah.
slightly less visibility 6 months out. So we tend to look at it in sort of rolling 3 month blocks.
Yeah. And as you get more successful and your brand sort of becomes more aware, are you seeing any kind of competitive response from, I don't know, I mean, is there any chance that M&S sort of wake up at any point in the, you know, next 20 years?
I mean, obviously M&S already arguably target this market,
sure,
don't they? I think that the reality is that women don't just shop in one place anyway.
Yeah.
Obviously, what we're trying to do is take market share away. And the better product that we deliver and the bigger the brand gets, the more and more market share I believe that we will take, as we've seen already. In a way, competition is just part of doing business, isn't it? And I think, you know, the better other people get at serving this market in e-commerce, then it just creates more of a market, I think. So I think competition per se doesn't worry us. I think the fashion market is so big, as long as you carry on always having the customer, thinking about the customer in everything that you do.
Yeah. I mean,
looking outwards, not looking inward.
I mean, we know that our core demographic actually spends more than the demographic that are serving ASOS and Boohoo. And obviously they're both massive. So
yeah.
I think, you know, there's a big market there and we just want to try and get as much of it as we can.
If you execute broker revenue forecasts, is there anything, sort of any pinch points around capacity, logistics that one should think about or that you guys are thinking about?
We're constantly planning. Yeah. So I think if growth comes as a surprise, it creates operational friction.
Yeah.
But we're constantly planning for growth and using those numbers to influence our operational capacity. So it's just about communication and working with partners to make sure that you can do that. I think Clipper have been excellent in allowing us to scale at pace, and it's much easier to do that with the level of expertise that they have than it would have been if we were managing
it
ourselves.
I think it is where our decision to work with Clipper at the beginning is. Born fruit, I think, that, you know, we had 4,000 square feet when we first started with Clipper. We've got 19,000 square feet now, and we've got, by Christmas, we're going to have 30 staff, I think, at Clipper.
Yeah.
You know, we started with one, we had one member of staff at the beginning, and we've managed to do that in 3 years pretty seamlessly. You know, we've been able to focus on what we do, and Clipper have executed that brilliantly with very high SLA levels and...
Service level agreement.
You're going to go on just with women, not with men.
That's an opportunity too. It's perfectly possible that menswear could be a route that we could go in the future.
but not soon.
Not in the immediate future. I think the opportunity at the minute in women's wear is so immense. You wouldn't want to diversify into men's at this point when the low-hanging fruit, I suppose, is product expansion to a customer that we already understand.
Is there a big, geographically, is there a big sort of mix of customer base?
Yeah, we're right across the UK. So anywhere where there are relatively affluent women, then we will index pretty high for sales. I mean, the reality is we sell right across the country, but where we over-index would be London and surrounding areas, so all of the home counties, the North Cheshire, the North West generally, because it's a relatively affluent area. Edinburgh is another area where we over-index, relatively affluent. Really anywhere around urban areas, I suppose, and the surrounding areas, or, affluent country areas, hence the home counties, I guess. And then we've also got the opportunity, obviously, overseas, because up until now, we've only marketed to the UK. The opportunity that we've seen here undoubtedly exists overseas. So, we plan to start testing overseas marketing at some point. I would say in the next 12 months, we will start to test.
And have you got a country in mind or not?
It could be anywhere. We're debating and looking at opportunities. As much of it as anything, it's about delivery and returns.
Yeah. Is there any capital expenditure planned or capital in nature?
Not really. No. I mean, we may need small amounts of equipment as, things like racking at the warehouse. If there are exciting e-commerce technologies, then we would obviously look at those consistently. But we're not a capital-intensive business.
You mentioned, I think, you've got 19,000 square feet at Clipper, and that's going up to 31,000, was it you said?
No, we've got 19,000 square feet currently, and we have 30 staff.
Oh, 30 staff. Yeah. Sorry, my hearing.
Yeah.
Okay. How does that work? Is it they who determine how much space you're allocated? Do you have to request it? Do you have to be clairvoyant for what you're going to need?
It's collaborative.
Yes.
So it's constantly just looking at, you've got an expectation, how are we performing against that? Do we need to flex it up, flex it down? But I think the great thing about Clipper is because they're able to help you flex better again than if you were doing it yourself.
How much revenue could 19,000 square feet of warehouse sustain?
Well, I think if I just draw you back to what slide is it? It's this one with the graphs. So it's got the different spend areas. What you can see is that our sort of logistics line is very consistent as a cost of percentage of revenue. And so obviously as you grow revenue, you need to increase your space, but it's proportionate to your revenue growth.
Yeah.
So, but again, the great thing is that the opportunity is there to expand into space without having to think about massive logistical changes.
Sure.
Are there any plans to sort of change product flow to make product flow even quicker or less stock to be held?
The strategy for the business is constant new in, so nothing's changed really. The strategy is always in to bring in new stock and turn that stock very quickly. And I guess the thing that is changing is we have new product coming in more regularly. Now we haven't, because that tends to be what particularly excites customers, is they want new in product all the time, particularly repeat customers. They want to see new in product. So we have new in product coming in every week now, whereas a year ago that wouldn't have been as regular as that. And that will just get more and more as the business develops.
I think on the repeat product though, yes, we do. So we can order to lead time based on the successful product that we're putting into repeat. So if you know what your lead time is, you can buy to that lead time, and then so you don't have to have everything delivered. You could put a big order in one go because, you believe that will happen, but you can phase the delivery of the products.
You're clearly pedaling incredibly hard. What is, if you had one thing that is a problem, I mean, where is the weakness for you?
I suppose that where you carry the, where we believe you carry the greatest risk is in people and product. And what you work to do is to mitigate the risk in those areas.
How do you do that?
By obviously having a really strong team spread across lots of areas. So there's that second tier of management I talked about, a bigger product team. All of that mitigates risk because you've got less single points of failure. With a very small team, you run the risk if one person leaves, they carry a degree of knowledge. So what we're doing is ensuring that there isn't any single point of failure in the business, that people can do each other's jobs and people have got knowledge. I mean, it's a necessary part of being a very small business. You know, when we only had 15 staff, you know, certain people knew certain product areas, but with 40, it becomes, there's less risk. Making sure it's a, you know, that we constantly have a good place to work, that people want to work for us, that it's an exciting place to work, mitigates against people leaving of their own accord. With product, again, if by having a very diversified product range, by bringing in lots of new in product all the time, that mitigates against, because people have asked us before, what happens if you get the product wrong for a season? That wouldn't happen because we don't design and buy by season, because we are designing and buying on a weekly basis. So having that very diversified product mitigates against having a big collection of product that didn't sell for whatever reason, or a supplier not delivering, or you know, any of those things.
You need quite a decent sized design team to keep that speed going.
Yes.
Well, it comes back to that point we were making earlier though about design teams and newness, and we've got an increasing sort of core product base that doesn't need the same level of ongoing design resource. I think the other point around that is that every day that goes by, we increase the amount of data and learning within the business. If we go back to, I think I said it in the video that went out, but if you go back to the very start of the business, a lot of the decisions were based on instinct and experience, whereas now we have learnings and we can point decisions back to data points. So increasingly as that data builds, it helps with decision making and risk management.
So you're not so reliant on individuals.
Exactly, yeah.
Do you have to increase your provision? Because you're expanding the product portfolio, you're going to presumably have more products that fail, because that's the nature of the beast.
Not necessarily. I mean, I think obviously what we, with that test and repeat model that we have on the stock purchases, we order in very small minimum order quantities. So your risk of a product, individual product not working, doesn't necessarily increase just because you expand your product base. So provisions are all included within the numbers that we present.
And has it gone up?
Well, it's the sell-through, no, not really. No, we've had really, I mean, if you look at the sales growth that we're seeing and the stock turn that we've got, you know, that it's doing really well. So we don't particularly have any increase in provisions proportionately.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.